Thanks for joining us today. Larry Mueller here, and we're starting our show today by taking a look at the history and significance of the sport of lacrosse. Patty Lowe is our guest. Great to have her with us. She's a professor emerita in the Bedell School of Journalism at Northwestern University and the inaugural director of NU's Center for Native American and Indigenous Research. Patty's a citizen of Mushkezibee, or the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe, and she produced a PBS Wisconsin documentary about lacrosse. It's called Sacred Stick, and it's a good one. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. What do you know about lacrosse? Why do you love it? Has it played a role in your life? What do you want to know? Maybe you don't know anything about it and want to know the particulars. I hope you'll join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Patty Lowe, welcome back.
Larry, it is so nice to hear your voice again. You're one of my favorite colleagues in the universe, so I'm really happy to be here.
Patty and I were colleagues for close to 20 years at the University of Wisconsin in life sciences communication. Oh, it's good to hear your voice, too, and I was really glad to have you on to talk about lacrosse. It's the aura, the history, and so forth of lacrosse has always been intriguing to me, and it's the oldest sport in North America, isn't it?
It is, and it's an indigenous originated sport. So it started here and it spread all over the world. And right now, the last time I checked, it was still the fastest growing sport in the world.
And I think it's doing very well here in Wisconsin, too.
It is, in both indigenous and non-indigenous communities. It's a fast-growing high school sport. But it also has had a resurgence in Native American communities who have gone back to playing it as a medicine game, a sacred game with all the cultural protocols, with wooden sticks that are handmade. And that's been really wonderful to see the explosion of lacrosse and the fact that Native American communities are taking it back.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there are probably many people listening who aren't familiar with the game. So we'll start with the basics. What are there? 10 players to a side on the field at any one time?
Yeah, and a couple of goalies who, boy, you have to really, I'm the mom of a hockey goalie, and that's a really tough position to play. I mean, anybody that can stand up to 75-mile-an-hour, 100-mile-an-hour hard pucks or, you know, hard balls coming at them is, I don't want to say has a little screw loose in their head, but I sure wouldn't want to do that.
And the equipment, as you say, there's not a lot of equipment. I mean, they're the sticks, which have a little net.
They're usually aluminum sticks or plastic sticks with a netting. And it's kind of an elongated catcher, the catching part of it. And it's pretty much modeled after the sticks the Haudenosaunee made. And that's a community, like a lot of Native communities, that claims to be where the game originated. But my tribe has similar stories. And if you talk to the indigenous people who, from Aztec and Mayan cultures, there were ball games there at the, beginning of time. And we don't really know. There's a really good book written by Dr. Greg Gaetti called Spirit of the Game that talks about that and other indigenous sports. And, there may have been multiple origins for lacrosse. I mean, almost every culture has balls and sticks, and it's inevitable that some kind of game is going to be created from them.
Yeah, it kind of, in a way, it kind of reminds me of hockey.
It does, because there's action behind the net in both lacrosse and hockey, and some of the same rules apply. So if you like hockey, you probably will like lacrosse.
Yeah. Callie in Mequon has something for us. Callie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm so nervous. I've never called in before. I feel like a celebrity. The lacrosse is the reason my husband and I are married. My older brother played out east at a private school, and that's how he was introduced to it, more that affluent white body kind of exposure to lacrosse. Brought it out here to the Midwest when my parents got divorced, and the only reason I met my husband is because he co-captained the team with my younger brother, who played because my older brother played. So it's not lost on me, like, the cost prohibitiveness of the game and that, you know, our exposure to it is white bodies, but my husband, because it's been such an important game to our family, decided to go through the coaching process for our children. And it was the first time we were exposed to so many principles about appreciating your opponent versus annihilating your opponent. And just this gratitude, like you're calling it a medicine game, this gratitude that someone else shows up so that you can play and that you can get that medicine, as opposed to a lot of the competitiveness that is present in our other sports as an American, you know, what I'm exposed to. And it's just been a beautiful sport. One of the people who spoke at one of the tournaments expressed how we speak to our ancestors through the game, too. That when we touch the ground by our running or throwing the ball, they are brought joy by our presence, that we're like sort of signaling to them that we're there and that we're thriving. And that's a beautiful element to it as well.
Oh, Callie, thank you so much.
Just a beautiful story. And you know, that really kind of captures the spirit of the game for me. I've had the grace of being able to witness lacrosse games, or, you know, we call it Bagataway. It's lacrosse in our communities, but in other parts of the country, it's called stickball, or, you know, every Native community has its own name for it. But there's this underlying, and I think Kelly just described it so well, this underlying reverence, this understanding that you're playing this game and it's more than a sport. And, you know, in traditional times, Larry, we called it, translates to little brother of war, because lacrosse was a game historically that was used in place of war. If there were two communities that had a dispute, rather than going into battle, you know, it was the equivalent of, you know, taking it outside. And they would play a game rather than go to war, and the winner, you know, prevailed. So the other thing, you know, at some point I would love to tell you a story about the use of lacrosse during Pontiac's Rebellion to take Fort Michilimackinac. This is after the French and Indian War. It's a wild story.
and we will get to that. I do want to hear that story. Callie, thank you so much for your comments. Appreciating your opponent. That's a nice way to put it. Thank you again. Josie in Monona. Your turn. Hi, Josie.
I'm actually calling to talk about Fort Michilimackinac. I'm Sault Ste. Marie, Ojibwe, and my dad grew up on that. I was born and raised there. So I grew up on the story of the Bataguay game that took the fort. And so the irony of you mentioning that is fantastic. That has always been a huge part of my childhood, my life, knowing that story. So I love hearing about it, and I thank you for doing this show.
Josie, thank you so much.
But Josie, maybe if you grew up with it, you should tell the story.
I just know that, you know, we go up to the fort and to both Fort Mackinac on the island and Michilimackinac on the mainland. Most years of my childhood, and talking about, you know, they thought it was just going to be this friendly game between the Ojibwe and the Sauk, and that the commander should have seen the warning signs of this was going to be an attack, and the fact that they tossed the ball over the fence and went in. And the women pulled out all of the weapons from their dresses. And it was an absolutely flawlessly executed attack. that started as what seemed like a friendly game. And it's a fantastic story.
Yeah. You know, Larry, sometimes it's the big brother of war, not the little brother of war. And you know, after the French and Indian War, the French had to turn over all 14 forts to the British. And the native people around those forts didn't much care for the English. They much preferred the French, who extended credit and were kind of loose and chill. And so Pontiac organized this taking of all 14 forts on the same day so the British couldn't send reinforcements. And my tribe and the Sauk were tasked with taking Fort Michilimackinac. So we informed the fort that we were going to play lacrosse for the amusement of the troops on the king's birthday. And the plan was the women who were watching the game had blankets and weapons hidden underneath their blankets. And the third time, there was the plan that the ball would, go over the fort picketing, you know, the first time, go over the second time. And the third time, they would attack the fort. Well, the third time the ball went over the picketing, a British soldier actually opened up the gates to the fort. And the whole thing was over in 12 minutes, according to Alexander Henry, who wrote a book, which is in the rare book collection at the Wisconsin Historical Society. He survived by hiding under the dirty laundry of the wife of Charles Langley, from Langley County. So just one of my favorite stories.
Oh, boy. Josie, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, number 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Kathy in Lac des Flambeaux, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Lacrosse was very big in our family. My son, when he was 12 or 13 years old, took up lacrosse. We belonged to Congregation of the Great Spirit in Milwaukee, and then there were other churches, and the people from those churches would socialize a lot, and they got together a lacrosse game. I believe it was Mark Denning who was his teacher.
Oh, Mark Denning, yep.
Yes, and he loved it, and then he eventually got married, and there's two boys came with the marriage, and so our sons, and his sons, and they both took up lacrosse, and I believe it helped very much socialize them where they were comfortable around other people more, and one of them is a musician now performing. He went to Chicago Youth Symphony Program. I don't have the exact name of that, but they sponsor the musicians, but I think it really gave him a lot of security.
Oh, Kathy, thank you so much. Comment?
Yeah, discipline and respect for your opponents and tradition and history. A lot of times these young children on Native reservations across the country are playing with sticks their grandfathers or their fathers carved for them. And again, there's that reverence and that connection to their creator. It's called the creator's game in many communities because it's there are some really old, beautiful stories about how lacrosse originated. And a lot of times it's a connection with the other world. And so I just love to hear comments like Kathy's about, you know, the fact that her boys grew up playing it and learned discipline and teamwork and, you know, develop that reverence for the game and for their landscape.
Yeah. Kathy, thank you so much for calling. Patty Lowe, our guest today, Professor Emerita in the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University. She put together a wonderful documentary on the game of lacrosse, and it's great to have her with us. You have an experience to share. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Our technical director is A. Emily Ralph. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Patty Lowe, our guest today. We're talking all about lacrosse and its history with Patty. And I hope you'll join in. Number 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. John wanted you to, in an email, to talk more about how some consider lacrosse to be healing and spiritual.
One of my favorite stories comes from the Passamaquoddy. It's about this young boy who disappears every night, and it's a very involved story, so I'm giving you the Reader's Digest highlights.
Okay.
And his father tries to follow him, but always loses him. And then one day he's successful, and he follows him across the Milky Way, which is the path of souls in some Native communities, the entrance to the other world. And he sees his son lit up playing lacrosse. And eventually the reader understands, or the listener of the story understands, that this is the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights. And, so there are these beautiful kinds of stories that connect lacrosse to a spiritual realm. But the way that I have learned about lacrosse in Haudenosaunee communities, these are the Haudenosaunee Nationals, formerly the Iroquois Nationals, and in some of the Ojibwe and Menominee communities, Stickball and Cherokee and some of the other southeastern communities, is that from the beginning of carving the sticks, which come from plant relatives, and sowing special medicines. For example, if you're hoping to emulate the agility of an animal, like speed of a rabbit, maybe you sow some fur into the ball that you're creating. There are ceremonies of dipping lacrosse sticks in sacred waters. And the first caller who described the reverence of respecting your opponent, all of these things go into the game of lacrosse, which sometimes was played for miles. the entire city of Chicago was one big lacrosse field at one time, I was told. It's really difficult to, and really it's probably not my place to talk about the spiritual traditions of other communities, and I won't do that, but there are 573 federally recognized Native nations and a whole bunch of state recognized tribes. They all have some, most of them, I won't say all, but many of them have some version of a game that we would recognize as lacrosse. So, I'm super excited about this. I've been advising the Field Museum, which has a new lacrosse exhibit that's going to open in May, on May 14th, I think. So, my mind is just filled with facts and figures and thoughts about lacrosse. If you can tell, I'm pretty charged about it.
Well, and the opening happens on my actual birthday, so there you go.
Oh, all right.
Well, has been a professional league.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, back when the settlers first arrived, they saw Native people playing lacrosse and they learned the game and played against them. But of course, they weren't nearly as good as the Native men. It was primarily a men's game that they played against. And they developed an amateur lacrosse association back in the mid-19th century. and specifically excluded Native Americans. we're gonna borrow this game from you, and then we're going to exclude you from playing. Perhaps because they knew that the Native Americans would probably beat them. But this continued, Larry, until the 1980s, where lacrosse, USA Lacrosse, would not let the Haudenosaunee, then called the Iroquois Nationals, play. Part of it was because the Haudenosaunee, we don't call them Iroquois anymore because it was a disparaging word that, you know, the Algonquin people, the language that my folks speak, gave to the Six Nations people. And the Iroquois Nationals renamed themselves Haudenosaunee Nationals 2 years ago. But these are communities that straddle Canada and the United States. So the Haudenosaunee Nationals have players from both countries. And USA Lacrosse wanted them to declare either I play for Canada or I play for the U.S. And the Haudenosaunee Nationals say, no, we're a sovereign people and we want our own team. We travel on our own passports. And of course, after 9/11, it got really tricky. And they were finally allowed to play in international competition. And you referenced the documentary that I did. It focused on the 2007 Indoor National Lacrosse Championships. And the Haudenosaunee Nationals actually beat Team USA and took Team Canada to overtime. So they are very competitive. They're making plans to play in the 2028 Olympics, which is the first time lacrosse will be played in the Olympics. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens because there are all these questions about whether the United States and Canada and other countries will recognize the sovereignty of the Haudenosaunee people. So we'll see.
Interesting storyline. And the Olympics are coming up pretty darn quickly. So... it's something to follow. There was as you mentioned Canada, of course, and Canadian George Beers, I think, is recognized as the person who recorded the rules of lacrosse.
Yep.
How did that influence the game?
Well, it was the way the Native people played it was pretty intense. I mean, it was not at all uncommon for people to break their legs and break their arms, and some people even died playing it. So the amateur lacrosse rules sort of civilized the game and made it more palatable for Western audiences.
And so it's in some ways a kind of a different game then.
Yeah. It went from a no holds barred kind of free-for-all to, well, you can't hit someone with your stick, you know, in this place, and it just toned it down quite a bit. You know, one of my favorite stories about lacrosse came from my mentor, the late Joe Rose, who is an amazing man at Bad River. And he talked. I was doing a documentary about Native baseball because there were all these Native men who wound up in the Baseball Hall of Fame. One of whom was a pretty famous pitcher by the name of Chief Bender. And I asked Joe why there were so many good Native baseball players, and he said they used to, when he was a kid, they would do batting practice with lacrosse sticks. And even an 11-year-old kid could hurl an almost 95, mile an hour fastball. And if you can hit a ball like that, you probably are going to find some success in Major League Baseball. So lacrosse keeps popping up in all kinds of interesting places for me.
Rick in Madison has something for us. I think Rick's one of your former students. Let's go there. Hi, Rick.
Bonjour. I just wanted to, I've done some research as far as lacrosse goes as well. And you covered part of it of like where fields didn't end, like all of Chicago. But I was just wondering for the other callers that if you could just bring up like what does the Wisconsin Historical Society have as far as artifacts and accessibility to it?
You know, I don't think I can answer that question. My research on lacrosse was for a documentary, so I was looking primarily for photographs, and they do have some photographs of lacrosse in their iconography collection, but I never looked specifically for actual artifacts.
Hmm.
So that would be a good thing. If anybody knows the answer to that question, I'd be interested to know, too. I can tell you what the Field Museum is. I've been knee-deep in their archive for the last 2 years working on this lacrosse exhibit.
Well, Rick, do you have some knowledge of it?
I've seen a few artifacts at the Historical Society. I've seen maybe one stick and a few balls that were tarred twine.
Tar?
Week old and tar. That was the ball.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, Patty, you can talk about what the people would find at the Field Museum.
Oh, I mean, there were scores of sticks that we looked through. We were trying to create as diverse an exhibit as possible. It's the first rotating exhibit in the Native Truths Hall, which is a huge exhibit that 165 Native people contributed to. And there's very little third-person information in there. It's all first-person stories, multimedia. It's really, I think it's a really, really good exhibition. And it also, what I appreciate the most is it has a much-needed, long-awaited apology from the field for the really problematic, unscrupulous collecting methods that they had for decades. The lacrosse exhibit will feature sticks from southeastern communities like the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Seminole. It will feature, I know we picked the Menominee stick. It has Haudenosaunee sticks. It has a number of different balls. It has double balls and related games that were played like lacrosse in other Native communities. And we were working on a virtual exhibit as well. There's tons and tons of stories from people, celebrations of community figures like Orrin Lyons, who was the kind of the godfather of the Haudenosaunee Nationals and the first Native person inducted into the lacrosse, the National Lacrosse Hall of Fame. There's just going to be a lot to this exhibit. It's pretty exciting.
It is. Rick, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You could join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. You know, the sovereignty, the broader idea of sovereignty often comes up, and I think it's a complex subject, but what does the word sovereignty mean, and how does it relate to Native Americans?
Well, sovereignty is self-determination. When the first European settlers arrived on this continent, they realized that there were people living there that had possession, and I don't want to say ownership because that wasn't traditionally the way indigenous people thought about the land, but they realized that the native people used it and possessed it and lived on it and realized that they, if they wanted it, they had to either go to war over it or sign treaties. But the act of treaty making, and this was the method that, you know, millions, hundreds of millions of acres were transferred from indigenous communities to what became the federal government, they had to sit down and negotiate as equals. So they realized that these were people who possessed sovereignty and had the authority to either sell the land or be ripped off of it, ripped off from it. So that act of sitting down and negotiating was an inherent recognition of sovereignty. In the U.S. Constitution, there's a line that says treaties are the supreme law of the land. So the treaties that were negotiated with these Native communities are legal. They don't have an expiration date. And that's something that was never given up. And the United States has a nation-to-nation relationship with the 573 federally recognized Native tribes.
It's a big topic, and you did a really nice job of summarizing that very tough topic in a pretty short period of time there, Patty. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate that much very much. Well,
if I can add to that,
sure.
If we have time. One of the things that was really interesting is that, you know, in 1924, the United States conferred Indian citizenship on Native people. It was largely because of the contributions that people like my grandfather made in enlisting and fighting in World War I. Veterans, those Native veterans, received citizenship in 1921. In 1924, it was extended to all Native people. The Haudenosaunee were very upset because they felt it was an infringement of their sovereignty. They didn't want to be citizens of the United States. And what was really interesting in World War II, when Selective Service made all Native and non-Native men eligible for selective, you know, to be enlisted in the military, the Haudenosaunee went to the U.S. court to say, no, we, you know, you don't have the right to tell us as a sovereign nation that we have to serve in your war. Even as their chiefs were standing on the U.S. Capitol, telling the steps of the Capitol, telling young Haudenosaunee men to enlist in the United States military. They didn't want to be drafted. I mean, they felt that they had the right to say, no, you don't have the legal authority to draft us. But at the same time, they declared war independently on the Axis powers and served in the U.S. military. So it's a really interesting relationship there. And sovereignty is a complex concept.
Oh, Patty, it is indeed a very complex topic. Just on lacrosse, you know, we've talked mostly about men and lacrosse.
Mm-hmm.
What about the women's game? I know the women play.
Absolutely. And there's a beautiful sketch in the Wisconsin Historical Society done by Seth Eastman of women playing. I think it's Seth Eastman. Don't quote me on that. but it's this scene in a wide lacrosse field of Dakota women playing lacrosse. So, you know, there's evidence going that suggests that even before settlers arrived, women were playing the game as well.
So it's not the sole. Not only the men are playing
it. Right.
And the women have been.
Everybody's. Right. And then you look at lacrosse being played at the collegiate level by female athletes, and that's really exciting. There are some really excellent lacrosse out there.
Yeah. It's exciting to see this sport which it's our oldest sport, and it took a dip for a while, but now it's really exciting to see the excitement surrounding it and the large number of people who are playing it now. Patty, it's been a real pleasure to be able to talk with you, and I have to mention and congratulate you on being, you'll be inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I guess the nomination list was a bit thin this year, huh?
No. You've done a wonderful job in your entire career, and it's been always been fun working with you, and it was particularly fun to have you on today to talk about lacrosse. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Patty Lowe, Professor Emerita in the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern University, inaugural director of NU's Center for Native American and Indigenous Research. And prior to that, she was a faculty member here at the University of Wisconsin in my home department, Life Sciences Communication. And we were together and colleagues for 18 or 20 years or so. So it was really fun to get back with her. I hadn't talked to her in a long time. Hopefully we'll get together for some golf this coming summer. Oh, we're going to turn our attention to basketball and March Madness, and we'll talk a bit about brackets and bracket busting with our next guest, Tom Oates. That next, I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.